Good morning. Welcome to our roundtable panel. Very nice to have you all with us. And it's a delight that it's, well, it's a delight that you're all here, and it's a delight that it's Friday. That's all. Just start there. Very nice to have you here and have you with us on this Friday. It's the 26th of August. Let me introduce our panel to you, and a reminder that you can join us by going to roundtable at WAMC.org, simply by emailing us, and we can get an idea of what's on your mind as well. And of course, when I say join us, you can also see us online at WAMC.org as well. Mike Spain is here. He is the associate editor of the Times Union, and he has been doing a lot of duty this week here. And we're
It's
thrilled.
Vacation time, you know.
Yes, so you're filling in for a lot of us, and Alan is out today, and it's very nice to have you here. Thank you very much,
thank
as
you.
Always. Your colleague is here as well. Chris Churchill is here, Times Union columnist. We have two Times Union folk with us, and this is the first time you've appeared together in the same place. So,
you know, we talk all the time at work.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah. So it's nice to have you here, Chris. Thank you for filling in many times this week as well.
Yeah, good to be here.
Barbara Smith is with us. She's an author, an activist, and just a wonderful presence on this program, and we're thrilled when she's here, and we thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning. Well, we have a lot to talk about, and we want to get right to it. Hillary Clinton called Donald Trump a bigot yesterday, and that made Donald Trump mad. So now there's a lot of stories going back and forth. There's an article in the Washington Post about the two candidates talking about race, and Trump targeting Clinton, and then Clinton targeting Trump. And the back and forth, it's become very ugly. I don't think it surprises really anyone that the campaign has turned even uglier than it already has been. But this is more direct. And so there's a lot to discuss and a lot to go through here. Barbara, let us begin with you of what you just make of the overall tone of what we're hearing.
Well, I think the tone is unique in our presidential race. I think our campaign, I'll use the word race for the meaning that we're focused on today,
yes,
which is racial oppression and racial differences. But in any event, I think, as I said, the tone is different for our presidential campaign. The content is not necessarily different because this is a through line in U.S. history. And I think there's so many things I want to say about this, but one is that I think it's disingenuous to say that the Republican Party has not been involved in getting us to this point, because their policies, their stances, their dog whistles, et cetera, going back a number of administrations and a number of candidates, that's exactly what we have seen. When candidate Reagan did his announcement, I guess, that he was running for president in Philadelphia, Mississippi, where the bodies of three civil rights workers had been found less than 20 years before, that was pretty clear. When Barry Goldwater ran, was it Barry Goldwater?
Where, yes.
When they said that this is going to turn the South for the next generation? Well, actually, it's more than one. So
Last night on All Things Considered, they were talking about this, they had a wonderful writer who I have to look up, who had written about African-Americans in the GOP and the connection between the two. And she was saying the real turning point was Goldwater, because there were so many senators who were the Republican senators that voted in favor of the Voting Rights Act, and yet the Republican
and the Civil Rights Act
and the Civil Rights Act and the and it was the party that nominated Barry Goldwater who voted against it, and that was a real turning point. And then since then, the Republican Party has had a very, very difficult time with African Americans.
Right, indeed.
But I think it gets a little bit more complicated in this case, though, because as we've discussed before on this show, in 1992, when Bill Clinton was running, he ran determined not to be Willie Horton, right? He wasn't going to be the soft-on-crime guy, so he used a kind of a lot of racial politics to get where he got.
Absolutely,
there was the sister soldier thing. There was the execution of the disabled man, who,
mentally disabled,
a black man who had killed a white police officer. Mm-hmm.
And
I mean,
and
so
the term of super predator that came
right.
Out.
I think that was actually while they were in office, but during the election.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's not like it's only the Republicans who have done this. I think the dog whistles have been
the difference here immediately to the campaign seems to be, and this is what the Clinton campaign has said at least, is that the things that happened in the 90s during those campaigns they have apologized for, and they have worked. And I'm interested in whether you agree with that. They have worked very hard to make that situation better.
Well, I don't look to presidential administrations for racial justice. So that's not just me. But the thing is that I think that the Democrats have a different rhetorical stance, and they also have a different policy and ideological stance than the conservatives. I think that now that we have a candidate who's aligned himself with the alt-right, the white nationalist, the racialist, that we are in another paradigm. So one of the points I wanted to make, and we're kind of getting to it, is that when Chris began it by saying that that Clinton, number one, had used racial dog whistles to get to his, you know, to get to his presidency.
To build his base, to build a broader base.
Yeah, and to be right. successful.
And what a number of states in the South doing it, too.
Yes, and the thing is, racism is a universal American problem and issue. It doesn't reside in one particular political alignment or another. So if we're going to really examine and look at racism and try to eradicate it, we have to look at it much more comprehensively than what do the Democrats think and what do the Republicans think. But as I said, the rhetoric and the policy of the Democratic policy are indeed different. It is Republicans who have done everything they possibly could to disenfranchise black voters, and those cases are still moving through courts.
So let me just take a sliver of this and say this statement, and your response is, which is when Donald Trump last night with Anderson Cooper, after Clinton had leveled her charge that he was taking hate groups mainstream, that Donald Trump referred to Hillary Clinton as a bigot toward African Americans.
Yeah, it's absurd. I mean, everything he says, everything that comes out of his mouth is really absurd, but also dangerous. And to say that she's a bigot, even though I am not a supporter of Hillary, as people who listen to this show know, because I supported Bernie Sanders. But the thing is, even though I'm not a supporter of her, I would never say she was a bigot. If by bigot we mean somebody who has individualized animosity and stereotypical perspectives about people of color, I don't think she's a bigot. I think she's a moderate. I think that the things that they did during, particularly around crime and criminal justice during the Clinton administration, I think had egregious impact upon the black and brown community, as did so-called welfare reform. So that's a different level. To say she's a bigot means that she's like a Breitbart type person, if you see what I'm saying. I just think it's outrageous. And he doesn't know what a bigot is, and he doesn't know what racism is. He really doesn't. He's talking out of his hat, so.
Do you believe that was a nice, they use that term, as far as taking hate mainstream? Do you believe that he has done that?
Well, you have the person who is the director of Breitbart. Yeah, definitely. That's just so, it's just so incredible that we would get there, because most regular, ordinary, qualified candidates would avoid an association or an affiliation with that kind of organization like the plague, even if they had horrible individualized perspectives about people of color. Even if they were in fact racist, they would say, no, I can't win getting involved with these people, David Duke and, you know, and the rest of them. So, yeah, I think he's...
And if not even getting involved, at least not distancing yourself from them. Right,
right, exactly.
Right, right. I think that's exactly right. Just by not saying, it's by what you're not saying that people are left with an impression, whatever impression they choose, depending on who they are. And isn't this really a battle for the people on the fence, the people in the middle? Donald Trump really has no realistic expectation of winning over the minority community. But what he wants to do is not appear to be a racist, which he's being portrayed very effectively as. And he wants to be able to go to the moderate Republicans and maybe the independents and even some conservative Democrats and portray himself as being open-minded. I want you look at what Hillary's success and the Democrats' success has been to end poverty. Well, it hasn't worked, and give me a chance.
I think he'd also like to depress the black vote too. I mean, if he can raise questions about Hillary, to the point where there's no enthusiasm about her in the black community, then obviously that helps him. He doesn't have to win them over. If you keep them home, that's the same as getting a vote.
Doesn't that seem to be backfiring though?
I don't think that, given the methodology and given his known stances and things that he has said from the day one of his campaign, I think it'd be really hard to fool black people into thinking.
But what if he brings up all the stuff that we were just talking about the Clintons in the 90s, the welfare reform, predator, the sister soul? I mean, he could kind of make people like, I don't know.
I wonder about that because there are much more credible sources than he who have raised those very things. We talked about the Michelle Alexander article that appeared in The Nation in the spring about why black voters should not support Hillary Clinton, and she did chapter, line, and verse of those policies. Mm-hmm. I don't think it had impact because most of people are not reading The Nation and they're not looking at those much more complex, I think, argument. So right. I think that the feelings that people have about the Clintons, the positive feelings that black people have about the Clintons, I think is not necessarily going to erode the vote. And then there's also the Obama factor of like seeing her as a continuity of the Obama administration. So they might continue, people might continue to vote for her as continuing his.
And he'll probably get out on the campaign trail too to really get.
But so far, that message has been to a mostly white audience. It hasn't been to an African American audience. I was struck by something when we do the show and we talk, and we get letters. Obviously, we get a lot of letters, and I think last week, Barbara, when you were on, and a lot of times when you're on, and it happens when you're not on too, but it does happen when you're on, and people will say, I can't believe you were discussing race and not having an African American present. And I write back and I said, we do. Barbara Smith was on the program
once a week.
And so right. So but they're talking about.
I know I could be here every day.
Well,
if there were world enough in time. I know that's what you're saying.
We need to hire
Joe.
You. Yeah. Yes. But my point is that I will say this as delicately as I possibly can, but I think for people who are listening, say, okay, well, you don't sound African American, so thereby you are not African American.
For those of you who don't have computer on watching me, you're not seeing my look of shock and
yeah, but this is my point. I mean, we've had the same thing with Libby of saying, you know, that you should have a lesbian on as well. I mean, it's striking to me sometimes because it's radio and you don't have the, and I dislike this word, but I'll use it anyway, the optics. Okay,
yes, the visuals.
The visuals. Okay, so. The reason I bring it up is that because the people who complain seem to be the white liberals who seem to be at the center of this debate between Clinton and Trump of who they seem to be fighting for.
So I just wonder, could I just try to unpack not sounding African-American?
Yes.
Just for a second. I mean, I'm not sure what they're talking about, but.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what it is because I've known you for so many years, so I have no idea. But it's interesting to me that's the kind of letters that we get. As I said, we get them when you're not here. We get them when you're here.
Right.
Yeah. And I just find that fascinating. Well, it's like I don't. And I say to people, oh, well, we had Barbara Smith on today, and she goes, oh, well, I don't. And the letter is, the letter that comes back is, oh, well, I didn't realize that in listening to her.
Well, every so often I will mention that I'm African American. Yeah. It's relevant, so I'm mentioning it again today. Do we have pictures on our website?
We do.
You know, just throw a little, throw a picture up there, please.
The reason I bring it up, though, is because I think it's interesting of how we look at these things how we hear these things of what we expect in that dialogue and what we expect it to look like and sound like.
Well, I was born in the far north, Cleveland, Ohio. I say it's the far north because my joke is if I was born any further north, I would have been in Lake Erie.
Yes.
So it's the far north.
Yes.
And it's very cold there, too, as we know. So and I was raised by Southerners, but they were Southerners. They spoke, you know, with a version of Southern accents, but I went to school in Cleveland, and they also spoke really standard English, too. Even though with a Southern accent, and I've lived in the East on the East Coast most of my life, but how I sound didn't really change from going to most. Many people say you sound like you come from the Midwest.
Well, so, some people hear Cleveland is the Midwest.
It is.
You get past
true.
Buffalo, and,
yeah. Right? Well, yeah, it is the Midwest.
Schenectady is the Midwest to some of us.
It is.
Westchester is upstate New York.
It is the Midwest, but I hope that. I hope that people will find out more about the variety of who we are. And I think that my points of view have been consistently from my African-American perspective.
Well, we're going to continue our conversation. We're going to take a quick break. We'll get back to the issues at hand and certainly talk a lot more about this and other issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll be right back after this short break. Okay, got a bunch of letters. Welcome back to the roundtable. We'll go to those letters first, and then we'll continue on with our discussion. We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Mike Spain, Chris Churchill, and Barbara Smith join us this morning, and we welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. We go to Roz first and says, it is disturbing by referring to the Clintons the way you attribute Bill Clinton's policies and rhetoric to Hillary. Is that fair?
I think they're a team. I think it is fair.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think it's fair to look at his policies because she was an intricate part of his administration. She was the one who introduced universal health care, and she represented the administration on policy issues, not on some of the more traditional issues that the spouses of the president have embraced in the past.
But of course she has her own ideas.
Sure she does. Sure she does. But she's also running partly on the record of the Clinton administration in the 90s.
She also, there are, on the record, there are quotes from her, from that period.
Yes.
Right, including the super predator thing.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So it's not like she was silent on these policies.
Mm-hmm. We also got this letter from Nick, who says, I find it so interesting hearing that people even consider race in this day and age. I'm 36, and I've never even thought of what any of you look like or your race. Now I am curious to look at a picture of you all. Well, we're just a handsome and beautiful bunch, I think, right? I mean, it's just as simple as that, Nick. No
need to go Googling.
No need to go look online.
Chris gets his photo in the paper 3 times a week. Where he's calling.
Yeah. there's a reason, at least I got into radio. Democratic administration, says Lisa, have not helped poor African American communities. Yes, Trump's rhetoric is worse. We must stop allowing Democrats to take our votes for granted. A paradigm shift is necessary. We need to vote green and put people, planet, and peace over profit, especially if you do not live in a swing state. And that is from a Jill Stein supporter. We got this from Jim, who says, your panel fails to grasp the argument about black lives in Democratic-controlled cities. That is Hillary's conundrum, and Trump is right to ask.
I'm not sure that black people are faring better in Republican-run cities or in Republican-run states. I would hazard a guess that they are not. So I don't see blaming Democratic mayoral administrations for the state of the black community nationwide. That to me is an argument that just doesn't quite fit what the situation is. I would agree, though, with this writer and then one that you read a couple of minutes ago, that we have to interrogate and be critical of the Democratic Party in relationship to their racial and economic policies as they affect our communities of color. So I don't think anyone or any party should be left off the hook in that way. But I don't really see blaming the Democratic mayors. And then there's also the characterization. I'm sure you talked about this, and I've heard you talk about this earlier this week, that Trump's characterization of black people is that all black people are living in poverty and fear of their lives. And
right. I mean, that kind of touches on what we were talking about earlier about your background and your quote-unquote not sounding black. I mean, the diversity of the black experience is diverse.
But I mean, that is Donald Trump, though. He uses, I mean, he basically characterizes everybody in stereotypes.
But there's if you go to cities like Chicago or Atlanta, there's a huge black middle class.
Yes.
And the comments
he seems unaware of that.
And you can, in a sense, you can understand why he is, because you don't see that shown very much in national media or on TV. I mean, it's almost like an invisible group. I don't know if you agree with that.
Right, indeed.
But he's running for president, so he should be aware. But
it absolutely is. And I always talk about like not being able to go to a movie and see anything remotely resembling my own life experience. And my family was not affluent by any means. They were working people. But the thing is that it was a stable family.
Right.
And they definitely did prepare my sister and me for a higher education, et cetera.
The flip side of that, too, is that there are millions and millions of white people living in the kind of endemic poverty that everybody associates with the black community. And you don't see those people that much in a higher number.
Right. Well, Mike was on the program yesterday when we were talking about this. We were taken to task by a couple of letter writers because we were pointing out just what we were talking about, the Trump picture of the African American, the plight of the African American, and that very negative connotation. And we got letters of people saying that because we were taking it to task, and they were saying, so for you everything's better and there is no problem, and that's that's not what we're saying. It was just that it's not a fair representation.
The problem is, I believe one of our articles said that 24% to 25% of people in the black community are living in poverty.
Yes.
So that means 75%. Or so or not. I think that it is only right and principled and ethical to be concerned about those who are having the hardest time in our country, whatever their race.
Exactly.
And that's completely legitimate. The problem is the source. When Donald Trump feigns to care about poor people of color, it just doesn't wash, because there's nothing about his rhetoric, nor about his lack of policies. He doesn't say how he's going to help anyone. He just says, you know, what do you have to lose? It's just crazy.
Or when he says your lives are disasters. I mean, that would have to offend a pretty good chunk of people.
Even people who are struggling economically, they don't see their lives necessarily as a disaster. You see what I'm saying?
It is so demeaning. Because you're not wealthy, it doesn't mean you don't have quality in your life and you don't have a loving family in your life. The two are not exclusive.
Exactly.
You don't have to be middle class or wealthy in order to have happiness. By no means. But really, I mean, isn't the issue economic? I mean, if the economy were not so tilted towards the upper middle class, which has survived this economic recession that we've been through so well, and others have not really climbed out of it. If a policy would help people at the lower income levels climb out of it and have opportunity to move on and to move up, that would erase a lot of the issues that are fueling this racial debate, it seems.
Well, I would kind of differ with you about that. I think the jury is out and the social science is still out on it, because this idea of a rising tide raises all boats isn't necessarily proven to be true when you have structural systemic racism. So that's, I think, why having policies and programmatic initiatives that actually address racial dynamics within economic situations, like, for example, that black people, black people without felonies, like, you know, this is a social science research project that's been demonstrated and proven. Black people without felonies, our arrest records are called back and hired less often than those who actually, white people who actually have a felony.
Yeah.
These are experiments that are done by social scientists where somebody says, you know, I'm black, I have no felonies, no arrest record, no crimes, whatever, and they don't get called back for the job. White people who assert that they have, and this is, as I said, this is an experiment. I'm not talking about actual cases, but obviously there's some relationship between the experiment and the reality.
It does not erase it. I don't argue with you on that point, yeah.
But also goes to the point that Donald Trump is saying, I'm going to make lives in poor communities better, but he's not really tying it, that I've seen, he's not really tying it to any particular policy. It's just this kind of vague promise at this point.
I'm a businessman. I'm successful. I'll work out some great deals. Our economy is going to soar and everybody will be lifted.
And 75% of you will vote for me in 4 years.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay. let's go to the letters. Jalen writes, if people want a perspective on the black middle and upper class, middle class, read Margo Jefferson's award-winning Negroland. She writes eloquently about growing up in Chicago. Janice writes, she's writing about what Trump has said throughout this week about two African Americans saying, what the hell do you have to lose? What do you have to lose?
Right. I think the point she's making is there's a very, very large black middle class out there that's not seen very much.
And Janice says, well, what do you have to lose? How about your vote? Good point, James.
Yes.
Anna writes, listeners complaining that discussions on race require the presence of someone black highlight the problem. That is, thinking that poor race relations are a black problem. Whites need to talk honestly and more often about race and how our daily lives and culture reinforce racism, which I believe certainly is true, but I do think all voices have to be a part of that conversation.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I just want to say something that I saw a few days ago. Heather McGee of Demos, she's the director of Demos. She was doing a show, I don't know if it was on Sunday, on the weekend, but there was a caller who called in and he said, I know I have these racial attitudes. He said, I'd like to be a better American. It was really moving. I mean,
yes.
He's very self critical and self-revealing, and she gave this terrific answer. So I would encourage people to look up, if they wish, besides Margo Jefferson's book. I haven't read that book. I do know Margo Jefferson's work. She's a great writer. But to look up Heather McGee's answer to this gentleman about how we can deal with these issues.
A couple more letters, and then we'll take a break. Narcissa writes, I'm a bit tired of the assumption that the African-American community needs to look harder at the Democratic Party and not give them a pass. The problem seems to be not that they don't make careful decisions, but that the Republicans continue to offer them nothing they might want. Make a better offer and maybe they'd accept it instead of trying to nudge them into voting for you. We got this from Don, who says, there are certainly reasons to be critical of Hillary Clinton, but at heart I believe that she cares about the well-being of American minorities. The notion that Donald Trump cares about American minorities is laughable. The prospect that he could become president of the United States is just chilling. We got this from Patrick, who says, we cannot expect a single person or party to reverse the systematic trends of racism in America. It is a task we must work towards. And Grace writes, it is well documented that Hillary disagreed with many of Bill's positions. The 1994 Welfare Reform Act is one that stands out. And I think Chris made this point about all of the statements are what is being brought into the record, not necessarily just the administration as a whole, but her statements during that time. Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll have more letters. We'll have other topics, and we'll continue. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Curtis Lumber, featuring Anderson Windows, Therma True Doors, Owens Corning Shingles, Valspar Paints, Cabot Stains, and more at 21 locations in New York and Northern Vermont. CurtisLumber.com. Noble Home, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Custom-designed panelized house kits featuring eco-friendly passive and solar design elements, noble-home.net. And Hanford Mills Museum, East Meredith, New York, a water-powered mill and woodworking shop offering tours Wednesday through Sundays. Antique Engine Jamboree, September 10th, hanfordmills.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Barbara Smith, Chris Churchill, and Mike Spain make up the group. I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. So while we're talking about all of this, we should mention the polls. They're all over the place. A new poll showing Hillary Clinton up 10 points gives insight into why Donald Trump's campaign is faltering. This is a Washington Post article. A new survey from Quinnipiac University shows that Hillary Clinton, with a 10-point lead over Donald Trump, with more than half of respondents preferring her candidacy, we're starting to hear the faint rumblings of a Hillary Clinton landslide, the assistant director of the poll wrote in his summary, which of course is the sort of thing that is currently being passed around Clinton headquarters in Brooklyn to semi-constrained giddiness. But this is one poll, and we don't get excited about the top line numbers from one poll because it is not even Labor Day yet. And we just saw a poll in the Los Angeles Times that had
USC,
the race,
yeah.
USC that right, had yeah. The race much closer with Trump up by 2 points. So
but that's a very unusual poll, though.
Yes.
I mean, that one, the methodology they use and everything is very different than all the others, and it's kind of an experiment to try to see if this kind of polling technique will work. I would toss that one out
until it's had a chance
to prove itself. Yeah. Right, yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I think Real Clear Politics has her up by 6 or 7. Generally, I mean, you average them all together, including
right.
The
but
poll.
But that's a popular vote, right? Most of these polls, it's the assessment of how she's doing in the key states that have the high electoral votes, and you know, states like North Carolina are in play. Even Georgia could be in play.
Even Montana, people are talking
Montana.
About now.
Montana.
So if you look at
so
she's actually doing
better.
It could
be an electoral landslide.
Right.
I don't know that it yet is shaping up to be. What would it need to be a popular vote landslide?
I think 10 points would qualify.
Yeah,
but
I
don't see that happening.
So the question this article asks, why did Trump's support slip? Well, at the same time that Clinton's margin in the polls grew by 8 points, Clinton's net favorability, those who view her favorably minus those who view her unfavorably, grew by 8 points as Trump's fell by 5. More than half of voters now say they have a strongly unfavorable view of the businessman, not the direction that he'd want to go. Barbara, you had mentioned early on in our conversation that you were not a Clinton supporter, but when you look at this race, is it the choice of these two candidates, or has the favorability of this woman become more increased to you?
Are you talking about, am I agreeing with what the polls say, or are you, I'm not sure exactly what you're asking me.
I'm asking, you had mentioned earlier that you were not a supporter, and so the question, meaning that you supported Bernie in the primary. So as we see these numbers indicate that Hillary Clinton's favorability has increased.
Yes.
Is that the case with you, that the favorability is increased with her, that she is becoming a better candidate? Or is it because she's becoming a better candidate because you're comparing who she's running against?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think her speech yesterday was really good because it was clear. Whenever she talks about what I think of as these social issues, she comes across decently.
authentic.
Exactly. And knowledgeably clear. I thought it was really good. And I think also the fact that she's running against Beelzebub, you know, really, you know, it does have an impact.
I, you know, just speaking about that for a moment, if we could, I was listening to CNN while I was driving in this morning, and they had on I can't think of her name, one of the top Trump surrogates on, and
Kellyanne Conway, maybe?
Yes. Yeah. It was, mm-hmm.
Oh, is she the new campaign head?
Not the campaign head, but it was one of their surrogates who's always on CNN that they bring out. Anyway, so... she was saying that very upset that Cher, of all people, had referred to Donald Trump as Hitler-like, and was saying that Hillary Clinton saying that Donald Trump was being racist was horrible, and that she should apologize for Cher calling Donald Trump Hitler-like. And I thought to myself, well, this really has nothing to do with the speech. This has to do with going back to these notions, which seem to be things that, for some reason, are momentarily lost in this new campaign setup with Donald Trump, of exactly what he said about. You know, taking entire groups of religious groups of people, removing them from the country, closing our borders, based on religion, building a wall. I mean, those are the things. And I'm personally a little very sketchy on that idea of using the Hitler term, although it does seem to be.
It's some of the rhetoric.
An apt comparison.
The rhetoric that Trump has used, you know, it basically categorizing.
I'm not defending
people.
Cher. But...
Yeah, no. I mean, right. But the rhetoric he used is uncomfortably similar to some of the rhetoric in Nazi Germany in the 1930s.
And so was the stuff that you read on Breitbart.
Right. Yeah. It's not the ultimate what Hitler became, but it mirrors some of that, you know, basically blaming whole classes of people for the problems that you're having, and it's their fault, and we're going to do something to them. And that's the prelude led to Nazi Germany.
Do you find that interesting, at least I do, but we'll see if you agree with me, that the campaign is using that now? Is that something that they're trying to get ahead of, even though it's been around for a long time? Because doesn't that just open up the Clinton campaign to saying, well, look, this is what you've been saying to make those comparisons?
Well, I think that it's so horrific, you know, the Holocaust and what Hitler did, that it loses some credibility if you're saying that he now in 2016 is Hitler. But I think it is still valid to note that it was those sentiments that led to that so horrible, destructive period in world history, and that we ought to walk it back and realize that we're on a slippery slope when we start blaming whole groups of people or people of a particular religion or people of a certain ethnic background or race, that is a slippery slope, and that's why it's wrong, and it has proven wrong in history, and that's okay. I mean, I think when people say Hitler, they kind of lose their credibility because it's going over the top. That's my feeling, personally.
I'll say one thing. I think the Clinton campaign was very deliberately trying to change the conversation from the email scandals of the past week, and Trump getting on TV last night and calling Hillary a bigot, I think really
helped her do that.
played into their hands very nicely, because that today you're not going to hear anything about emails. It's going to be all about him calling her a bigot and the speech that she gave yesterday. So,
well, you know, he's formulating his policy. He's going to make a policy speech about immigration. And it was supposed to have been last night. It was put off. And he's sort of taking the temperature of his supporters, and he's trying to measure what he says so that he can retain the support of those who rallied behind him when he called Mexicans rapists and murderers, and still appear to be somewhat reasonable about people have been here a long time, haven't gotten in trouble. As long as they pay their taxes and go through a program, we'll let them stay.
And
which is the Jeb Bush or Marco
Amnesty.
Rubio.
Amnesty.
No, it's Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio's policy.
I have to say, though, in listening to him talk to Anderson Cooper last night, I could not gather at all what that policy was.
I think it's still in formulation stages.
Well, it's going to have to go a long way before this speech for there to be some understanding as to what the actual policy is.
He doesn't have to have the policy. He has to read it off a teleprompter written by somebody
very well
else.
Written. Very articulate.
Barbara, I thought I saw you ready to jump in. I'm sorry.
Not necessarily about. Oh, I was going to say that calling Hillary a bigot. A bigot equals somebody who wants black votes, whereas he's saying, what do you have to lose? Because he wants votes.
Yes.
Not necessarily black ones, because people are saying that the reason that he's talking about the black community and how horrible it is to appeal to specifically white suburban women.
Deborah writes, if German Jews hadn't remained complacent, perhaps Hitler wouldn't have been successful as a Jew. I think it's apt. It's important to see his rhetoric as destructive to our democracy.
Fair enough.
John says, in our recent town vote on casino development, the pro-casino polls were increasingly leading by great margins and then lost by 100 votes. The explanations is thought to be that the pro folks got complacent and stayed home. I think that's always a message of the campaign.
Complacency will hurt somebody in this campaign, right?
Yeah, yes. Yeah. Go ahead. Chris?
I was going to say, Trump, I think he, every day, every time he speaks, he kind of makes people less complacent. So I don't know if that's that big of a deal.
He's doing everything he can to get Hillary's vote out.
Right,
exactly.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Well, we are out of time, but I thank you all very much for sharing your thoughts with us this morning. Thank you for writing in. Thanks for being a part of the conversation. Of course, thanks to our panelists. Mike Spain, Chris Churchill, Barbara Smith, always a pleasure to have you all aboard. Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.